Welcome back to this encore episode of Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. If we're going to talk about accomplished rock climbers, let's agree that age doesn't have to be a limitation. Deirdre Walnick is a great example. She started climbing when she was in her 50s, and at age 66, she became the oldest woman to summit El Capitan in Yosemite National Park. Deirdre's coach is perhaps the most accomplished climber in the world right now. He is Alex Honnold from the Oscar-winning movie Free Solo, and he's her son. Alex is the one who taught Deirdre how to climb. He's continued coaching her, but she is the one who felt inspired to try and asked for his help. She has pushed herself to keep at it, and she has accomplished some remarkable climbs of her own. This year, Deirdre released her memoir titled The Sharp End of Life, A Mother's Story. She is mother to a daughter, Stacia, who is a talented distance runner and cyclist, and her son, Alex. And when we talked in April, Deirdre said Alex was always unique.
He was different. He was different from birth. I didn't have a whole lot of experience with kids when I had him, but enough to know that.
At some point in this conversation, we are going to get to that question that everyone wonders about. And you know the question is...
Yes. How can I stand it?
Yeah.
How can I sleep at night knowing what my son does for a living? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always get that. How would you like to be that kid's mother?
So we'll get to that in a moment. But I don't want to miss your story and the way it starts in Queens in the 1950s. Growing up in a Polish family, Polish being the secret language. Talk about your mom's situation, because those circumstances from the get-go, I think, shaped a lot of what your life became.
Yeah.
She had had polio
as a baby. Yeah, my mother was a victim of that huge polio epidemic in the early 1900s. She was born in 1915. So there were a lot of things she couldn't do. So she couldn't carry us. She couldn't run after us. You know, we had to be extremely obedient. If she called, we had to go running. Very thought out set of rules for us, you know, both my brother and me. And of course, I was the girl, though. So I got all the fun stuff, all the chores. You know, the boy was king. In Eastern European, you know, mindset, boys are king.
The expectations on you as the daughter in the family were quite different.
Totally different.
I would say that the next big leap in your life, you moved into this marriage with Charlie, the kid's dad. I want to read a paragraph about Charlie that I think says a lot, but raises a lot of questions. This is pretty early on in the book, and you wrote, "When Charlie was a child, no one had heard of some of the disorders or syndromes we now know people can suffer from, like autism, obsessive compulsive disorder, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I wouldn't learn about them myself until years later, when some of my friends had little boys whose behavior seemed to mirror my husband's. But back then, as we whirled through each day, my main job, besides caring for my children and our home, was to do whatever was necessary to avoid an outburst, to appease. Old habits die distressingly hard."
Pretty grim.
How conversational have you been with the kids about the struggles before the book came out?
They didn't live at home through most of it, you know, so we didn't really have time for heart-to-heart talks. So not much, but they're very, very bright, and they're very observant, and they lived with this. They knew what was going on far before I even started thinking about doing anything about it.
There were definitely some adjectives that are apparent in reading about him. Charlie was brilliant.
Yes.
He was not emotional, but he was very engulfed in whatever was in his world.
He was probably obsessive compulsive or whatever you want to call it, but his entire focus was on travel. So anything that fed that was wonderful. And if it didn't feed that, he was morose and shut down, basically.
He accomplished a very interesting new pathway in teaching from a distance, which allowed him to go to Yosemite, which connected...
Which fed his travel mania or whatever.
And the family experiences.
He just wanted to be alone on a mountainside and teach that way.
Someone might think that because he was there
and the kids spent a lot of time in Yosemite and climbed a lot, that actually spawned Alex's accomplishment.
He was born climbing. I mean, he could stand up the day he was born, which is ridiculously impossible. The first thing that everybody said when they saw the baby the first day he was born was, what big hands he has. He had massive mitts for grabbing, and he had powerful thighs. And, you know, if you put him on your lap, he could just stand up just for a second, you know, but he could get himself vertical. That's all he ever wanted to do from birth. So nobody had to teach him how to do that.
How old was he when that first big climb happened in France?
He was almost 11.
Would you mind reading a description of that climb from the book?
Sure. What's that? I asked Geneviève. Qu'est-ce que c'est? The unusual geological feature shot straight up from the flat ground around it, a 300-foot-tall, phallic-looking spire of cream-colored limestone. C'est le monolithe. My stomach clenched as she said it. I vaguely recalled Philippe talking about le monolithe, where they would climb today, the monolith. I know the meaning of mono and lith. How could I not have put that together? Could that be the same one where... surely Philippe wouldn't have... surely I hadn't agreed... Words failed me in both French and English. I was mesmerized and horrified at the same time. Drawn toward it, as moviegoers at a horror movie are drawn to the gore and blood, knowing terrible things are going to happen, but continuing to watch nonetheless. The others were instantly forgotten. I hugged my jacket around me and walked alone to the base of Le Monolithe. It loomed over me, blocking out the sun. It blocked out everything but my fear. Philippe and Alex were so high already that I couldn't make out their faces. This was my own damn fault. I should have asked specific questions, details. I just left everything up to Philippe. Never again. If my son lived through this, if I lived through this, I'd never make that mistake again. But he had assured me that the climb was at Alex's ability level. Regardez! Look, look. People had been strolling the trails near the base of the climb, and they'd had begun to notice the two little splotches of color high, high up on the side of the rock. I kept walking around its base, slowly, my neck sore from craning upward. I'll never forget that day.
Could you even imagine or envision what might be ahead? What do you think when that's your 10-year-old up on the side of the mountain?
No. I didn't think I was going to survive that day. I'd never seen anything like it. I had never seen outdoor climbing at that point. I didn't know it was a sport.
Every mom knows that there are choices along the way. Do you encourage them and let them take risks?
Right. I got lots of advice from other mothers, you know, when I hang out waiting for kids to get out of school. Everybody could see how busy and active and physical Alex was and how different. It's not that he was hyperactive or anything like that, but just had no limits. He'd just keep going. He would stay up until his body just caved in and fell asleep standing up. He just did not want to stop. And they'd be up at 4:30 every morning. Go. But a lot of mothers gave me advice like, you should take him to a doctor, get him diagnosed or something, or get a drug to slow him down, or put him in gymnastics. That was a good one. And I did try that, but that didn't work. The other kids liked different things than Alex did. And that was hard. You know, we didn't know anybody else who climbed stuff. And so he didn't fit their parameters.
Could I talk with you about the transition at the time of the divorce from the kid's dad? There was a divorce, and then Charlie died of a heart attack. What I'm really interested in is how that changed your sense of self, your sense of freedom and place in the world, Deirdre.
1 month after the divorce became final, he died, dropped dead in an airport. That kind of changed everything. Immediately, because I had to handle his estate, trying to keep the kids on an even keel because they had just lost their dad. And a few months later, they almost lost Alex.
Just a harrowing phone call that you got from him. I had to reread it a couple times to figure out what's happening here.
Yeah. living it was like that too. I said, what's going on here? Is he really?
Maybe to set this up, we had talked about the fact that you had just gotten cell phones for everybody for Christmas.
Uh-huh. The down parka I had just given him had a little pocket for cell phones. And if not, he probably would have left it in the car. Yeah, this is the day after Christmas. You know, Stacia's asleep down in the hall. And I picked up the phone, groggy. Hello, mother. I'll never forget that. It sounds like he was doped, but he doesn't do that. Everybody knows that Alex doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't do any of that stuff. Where am I? Why am I all covered in blood? At that point, I almost dropped the phone myself. He had taken a horrible, horrible fall from the top of Mount Tulak, which is almost 10,000 feet. In the middle of winter, a huge storm that had blown in. It just sent him sailing down the mountain. He finished in a pile of boulders. Head first, broke a lot of bones, had a concussion. He was
and
a mess.
What you were hearing was hypothermia setting in. So it became a race against time to save his life from, forget the injuries, from freezing
from
to
freezing
death.
From freezing to death,
there.
Right.
With cell phone technology, the pings helped rescuers.
And they would ask me, because I gave the phone to Stacia, keep him talking, don't let him fall asleep. And I talked with the search and rescue people and they kept forwarding questions to him. What does he see to the north? What does he see to the east? And he was compass mendus enough to answer those questions.
Your book, Deirdre, is full of so many examples in which you are propelling your children, your husband, your parents, your life forward. The turn in this for me was hearing the ways you describe your daughter and your son propel you, how you trusted them enough to let them.
They were wonderful. It would be very, very different without them pushing me to discover what I could do. All through that period that I call that the black hole of my life, leading up to divorce, the death, and then the aftermath of all that, I would see them coming and going and having a wonderful time following their passions, being fulfilled. These things made their life rich. And I wanted some of that. I hadn't had any of that with Charlie. And so I started jogging a little bit here and there. And Alex's take on things is, I guess you could call it encouraging. If you can do one, well, then you can do two. You can run a mile with the dog, I guess you could do a mile and a half. And so I did. And then he'd come home and tell me, wow, cool, Mom, now you can do two. And I had never lived that way. I had never been encouraged to. And I signed up for my very first road race. It was the Run to Feed the Hungry here in Sacramento. It was an outrageous goal for me, 6.2 miles. Can you imagine running 6 miles? But I was almost up to three. But, well, it's a good cause, something my kids would embrace, and you further your goals, as it were. And Alex ran it with me. He decided to run it against all odds because he was just came home the night before from Europe from a climbing competition. And so came in at like midnight from a 12-hour flight and got up at 6 in the morning with me and went to do the Run to Feed the Hungry. That changed my whole life. That was the beginning of the beginning.
You started climbing in a gym and then moved to outdoor climbing. In 2017, at age 66, climbing with Alex. And you make a point to say, and climbing with ropes.
Yes.
You became the oldest woman to summit Yosemite's El Capitan.
I did. I didn't know it at the time. I was just doing it because I wanted to do it. Alex was willing, so up we went.
What has climbing done for you personally, beyond the relationship with your son?
I learned a lot about digging deep. I mean, I knew how to dig deep emotionally. I could deal with anything and had. But doing it on a physical level was different. I've always been kind of active. I rode my bike on the weekends and I'd go ski a few times a season. But this was something else. This was a lifestyle. And it was immensely rewarding on so many different levels. Climbers go to the most gorgeous places. And the only way to get there and see that view is to climb up there. And nobody else will ever see that view. You know, tourists will never get to a lot of the places I've been to see what you are capable of when you think you can't go another step. And then to do it is like, ooh. It's a question of increments. I had never learned to push my own incremental growth physically. And this is an amazing experience, all of it.
Okay, Deirdre, sounds like you couldn't have stopped it. How do you live with it? How do you live with what he does, knowing that in any moment his life could end, his life could change?
The risk depends on him, what shape he's in, the weather, the conditions, how he feels, if he slept enough, if his skin is right for that kind of climb. I needed to learn about that. That's mostly why I started climbing. Now anymore, I love it myself, but at the beginning, I just wanted to know what he was up to out there. So I had to learn to trust his judgment. All parents, to a point, have to learn to trust their kids' judgment. They're going to make a mess of it, or they're going to make a go of it.
How many times have you seen the movie?
Oh, maybe 10.
Do you shake your hands out like everybody else does in the middle of it?
Yeah, the first time was very hard. Even though I know he makes it, it took me a few tries before I actually mastered it, shall we say.
Deirdre Walenick, talking with me earlier this year about her new memoir, The Sharp End of Life, A Mother's Story. She's still on book tour, getting great reviews and a lot of great audience feedback. You'll hear my chat with her son next. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.